Time to wake up, sir. Mark Hall opened his eyes. The room was lit with a steady, pale, fluorescent light. He blinked and rolled over on his stomach. Time to wake up, sir. It was a beautiful female voice, soft and seductive. He sat up in bed and looked around the room. He was alone. He reached over and pushed a button on the nightstand by his bed. A light went off. He waited for the voice again, but it did not speak. It was, he thought, a hell of an effective way to wake a man up. He pushed the nightstand button again. The voice said softly, "Do you wish for something, sir?"
"I'd like to know your name, please."
"Will that be all, sir?"
"Yeah, I believe so."
"Will that be all, sir?"
He waited. The light clicked off. He slipped into his shoes and was about to leave when a male voice said,
"This is the answering service supervisor, Dr. Hall. I wish you would treat the project more seriously."
Hall laughed. So the voice responded to comments and taped his replies. It was a clever system.
"The voice," said the supervisor heavily, "belongs to Miss Gladys Stevens, who is 63 years old. She lives in Omaha and makes her living taping messages for SAC crews and other voice reminder systems."
"Aha," Hall said. The cafeteria was almost deserted. Levitt was there. He said the others were in the conference room. He pushed a glass of dark brown liquid over to Hall and suggested he have breakfast. "What's this?" Hall said. 42.5 nutrient. It has everything needed to sustain the average 70-kilogram man for 18 hours. Hall drank the liquid, which was syrupy and artificially flavored to taste like orange juice.
"Okay, let's go to the conference room. Stone wants to talk about Karp."
"Who?"
"Rudolf Karp."
Rudolf Karp was a Hungarian-born biochemist who came to the United States from England in 1951. He began to investigate meteorites with the intent of determining whether they harbored life or showed evidence of having done so in the past. Karp, upon breaking open his meteorites, was able to isolate bacteria. He found that they were ring-shaped organisms, rather like a tiny undulating inner tube, and he found they could grow and multiply. He claimed that while they were essentially similar to earthly bacteria in structure, being based upon proteins, carbohydrates, and lipids, they had no cell nucleus, and therefore their manner of propagation was a mystery. Karp presented his information in his usual quiet, unsensational manner and hoped for a good reception. He did not receive one. Instead, he was laughed down by the 7th Conference of Astrophysics and Geophysics, meeting in London in 1961. Levitt, however, had gone over the reports and the papers and found no reason to reject the meteorite studies out of hand. Many of the experiments were careful, well-reasoned, and compelling. He remembered this when he and other wildfire planners drew up the study known as the Vector 3. The Vector 3 was a report that considered a crucial question. If a bacterium invaded the Earth, causing a new disease, where would that bacterium come from? After consultation with astronomers and evolutionary theories, the wildfire group concluded the bacteria could come from three sources. The first was the most obvious, an organism from another planet or galaxy, which had the protection to survive the extremes of temperature and vacuum that existed in space. There was no doubt that organisms could survive. There was, for instance, a class of bacteria known as thermophilic that thrived on extreme heat, multiplying enthusiastically in temperatures as high as 70 degrees centigrade. Further, it was known that bacteria had been recovered from Egyptian tombs, where they had been sealed for thousands of years. These bacteria were still viable. There was no doubt that a spore could travel through space. But was another planet or galaxy the most likely source of contamination for the Earth? The answer was no. Another source was the closest source, the Earth itself. The report suggested that bacteria could have left the surface of the Earth eons ago, when life was just beginning to emerge from the oceans and the hot, baked continents. Such bacteria would depart before the fishes, before the primitive mammals, long before the first ape man. The bacteria would head up into the air and slowly ascend until they were literally in space. Once there, they might evolve into unusual forms, perhaps even learning to derive energy for life directly from the sun,
instead of requiring food as an energy source. These organisms might also be capable of direct conversion of energy to matter. The third source of contamination, the third of the vectors, was at the same time the most likely and the most troublesome. This was contemporary Earth organisms, taken into space by inadequately sterilized spacecraft. Once in space, the organisms would be exposed to harsh radiation, weightlessness, and other environmental forces that might exert a mutagenic effect, altering the organisms. So that when they came down, they would be different. Take up a harmless bacteria, such as the organism that causes pimples or sore throats, and bring it back in a new form, virulent and unexpected. It might do anything. It might show a preference for the aqueous humor of the inner eye and invade the eyeball. It might thrive on the acid secretions of the stomach. This whole idea of mutated bacteria seemed far-fetched and unlikely to the wildfire people. It is ironic that this should be the case, particularly in view of what happened to the Andromeda strain.